If it's Saturday morning, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and that's what you're listening to here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. You can check out their new showroom. It's not even new. It's just their showroom. That's at 982 Portage Avenue, the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. That's our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Dave Minuk, time to look into your crystal ball, your prognostication hat on. You're wearing a Blue Jays hat. I don't know if that's also your prognostication hat, but
coincidentally it is.
It is. That's a good coincidence. It's time to talk about our Winnipeg Jets over-under for the 2017-18 season.
I do want to point out, because oftentimes people say, well, you make a prediction, and is there any follow-up?
Is there any accountability?
Is there any accountability? So to that point, I went back last night and listened to our 2016-17 Winnipeg Jets over-under.
Uh-huh. And how did you do, my friend?
I went 7 for 10.
And how did the other gentleman on the show who's absent from today, his name that we shall not mention, do?
Well, let's just say our good friend.
Yes.
E. Ginsburg, not too obvious.
No.
Ezra G.
Yeah.
Went 3 for 10.
3 for 10. So basically, whatever Ezzy says, don't listen to him and do the opposite and you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty. 2 seasons ago, Mark Scheifele had 29 goals in 71 games. Last season, he had 32 goals in 79 games. Mark Scheifele will have over or under 33.5 goals this season.
Mark Scheifele's shot is lethal. Mm-hmm. He's been hitting a lot of posts lately, but I suspect that he will finish. I think he's going to finish under.
Under. So
yeah.
You think he's under 33?
Yeah,
and a half goals.
I have him in that 28 to 30 goal range.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, they talk about maybe he takes on more responsibility on the defensive side of the game, as we've heard ad nauseum.
Yep.
But you have it under for Mark Scheifele.
Correct.
Moving to Dustin Byfuglien, last season he had 13 goals. That's his lowest total since he scored 12 goals back in 2011-12. Dustin Byfuglien will have over or under 15.5 goals this season.
Another tough one, because the defense is going to get, you know, pretty even time on ice with all this talent, with Morrissey and Trouba and Myers and Enstrom. So, you know, will Byfuglien be playing those big minutes that he played? You know, we've seen him play year after year, which gives him the opportunity to get the points. Probably not. I'm going to go under. I have Dustin Byfuglien probably in the 10 to 12 goal range.
10 to 12. So that would be his lowest in years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You see a downturn in goals for Dustin Byfuglien.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
It means that maybe he's not taking the same kind of risks and he's playing, you know, could go up in assists. If you ask me about assists, maybe I'd say he's going to go up.
Yes, but alas, I'm not asking you about assists. Jacob Trouba. He averaged 24 minutes and 57 seconds time on ice per game last year. With the return of Tyler Myers to the Jets defense, Jacob Trouba will average over or under 24 minutes and 15 seconds time on ice per game this season. So that's a drop of 42 seconds a game is what I'm asking you about. Will he be over or under 24 minutes, 15 seconds?
In an ideal world, he would, because, again, it sees in more even distribution of the ice time, even though he's a horse and he could play that.
I was going to say, don't you have to run with your horses?
No, absolutely. But, I mean, the problem is you have a number of horses on this team, right? And that's the idea of the Jets' defensive depth, is that you have a lot of players who can play those big minutes. And so if you're not going to play, what are you going to do? You're going to play Tyler Myers 18 minutes? Or are you going to play Dustin Byfuglien, 22 minutes? And you're going to play Jacob Trouba 26? You know, I don't know. Like, it's a very interesting question. It gives me pause simply because, like I said, the last one I said it would be a more even distribution. So I'm going to go under. Now, of course, and you know, I'm going to add the typical: if there's injury, then that changes. But of course, we have to factor that into our answer.
You assume when you answer any of these questions you know they're everyone's healthy.
Three for three and under right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, so far you're very much of an under guy right now.
Yep.
And, of course, like you said, 7 for 10 last year. That's what you said?
I did.
Alrighty. Last season, we sort of spoke about this when we talked about the contract extension. Last season, Nikolaj Ehlers finished second on the Winnipeg Jets with 52 even-strength points. bested only by Mark Scheifele and his 65 even strength points. This season, Nikolai Ehlers will have over or under 56.5 even strength points.
It's a tough one. It's a very tough one.
These are tough questions.
These are not easy questions.
Not easy, no.
You know, we play softball together, Drew, but these are not softballs.
These are fastballs to your noggin.
Well, if they're to my noggin, then I might be a little bit woozy. But yeah. I'm going to guess on this one. I'm going to have to stick with the under.
Under.
I think that, you know, I actually think his points are going to go up this year. I think, you know, I think, what did he have, 72 last year? Or 64.
64.
Sorry, he had 64. I have projected to be about 72 this year, I think. And I don't know. Maybe I should go over.
But he might be getting more of those points on the even strength.
I mean, the power play.
Or on the power play, rather.
No, I'm going to switch. Let's go to over.
Over. He's changing his mind.
Yeah. I realize I projected him to about 72 points, and I think that he'll probably finish with maybe 58 even strength points.
That would be over.
Yeah.
Two seasons ago, Brian Little had 0.74 points per game played. Last season, Brian Little had 0.80 points per game played, which was a career high in points per game played. This season, Brian Little will have over or under 0.78 points per game played. That translates to 64 points if he plays all 82 games.
A tough one again, you know, because, you know, as these players get older and they're more susceptible to injury. I have Brian Little. I mean, he hasn't finished with that many points, like you said, since 2013-14, where he had 64 points.
That would tie his career high.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to go under on this one.
Under.
Yeah, just because that's a tough one to kind of overcome. Like, I think, again, if he's healthy, then I think it's possible for the whole season. I don't know, though. He hasn't shown that, you know, ability to play the 82 games in like I said, since 2013-14. So you hope for his sake that he does, but based on his most recent numbers, it's probably not going to happen.
Last year, Alex Ovechkin, Braden Schenn, and Nikita Kucherov tied for the league lead in power play goals with 17. Patrick Laine led the Winnipeg Jets with 9 power play goals. This season, Patrick Laine will have over or under 14.5 power play goals.
I thought based on the preseason, he'd have that many after the first game. I'm going to go over.
Over.
I think that his shot has hit another level this season, at least. And I think his usage will be more significant this year on the power play. And I just suspect that he will he'll be ripping home a lot of goals from you know, it was an interesting comment he made when he was asked about whether he would, with teams adjusting to him in his sophomore season. And he said, well, now I've adjusted to how they've adjusted. So I suspect he's got some trickery up his sleeve and he won't be, you know, kind of exactly where they expect him. But even if he is, the reality is that his shot is so good that it's very hard to stop.
I agree with you on this one, for the record. Tyler Myers, Patrick Laine will be over, I believe. Tyler Myers has averaged 43.4 games played per year in the past 5 seasons. Tyler Myers will play over or under 50.5 games this season for the Winnipeg Jets.
I have Tyler Myers playing over.
You have him staying healthy.
Yeah, I think he's going to be healthy. I think the last season or the last couple seasons have allowed him to kind of rejuvenate the body. Now, I could be a little bit wrong because, you know, he was a little bit slowed down at least in the preseason in terms of like getting back into the lineup and you know, he's dealing with some things. But I suspect he's going to stay healthy this season.
Matthew Perreault set a career high in points last season with 45 points in 65 games played. This season, Matthew Perreault will best that career high by over or under 6.5 points, i.e., will Perreault have more than 52 points this season?
Drew, you should be an odds maker because all of these numbers are so close to what I would anticipate these players getting.
That's hence the reason why. When it comes to this over-under segment, I have like a sixth sense.
Yeah, you do. I will give you credit. Even when I was looking back last year, a lot of the numbers were very close.
Yeah.
I have Matthew Perreault, I mean, again, based on him playing in the second line right now, first or second line, in the again, healthy, finishing with about 55 points. So I'm going to go over on this one.
Over. So you have him healthy and productive this season.
Yeah.
I also agree with you on that one.
Thank you.
In his Calder Trophy winning season, Steve Mason posted a save percentage of .916 in 61 games played. In his first full season in Philadelphia, Steve Mason posted a save percentage of .917 in 61 games played. This season, Steve Mason will have a save percentage of over or under .915.
For Jets fans hoping that they make the playoffs, they better be over. This one's a tough one. The problem is you try not, you know, they say small sample size with one game. You don't want to let that impact your thinking. No, I suspect that this team is going to get it together defensively and they're going to play better. And I think the group as a whole will play better. So I'm going to reluctantly go over on this one.
Over. So you think Steve Mason has a decent year for the Winnipeg Jets and puts up that decent save percentage.
Yeah.
Last season, the Jets had 11 different defensemen play for them. This year, the Jets will have over or under 8.5 defensemen play a game for them.
Under.
Under?
Yeah.
Do you think they stay healthy? Very healthy.
I think this group stays relatively healthy.
Okay.
And I think the truth also is that if one of those top six go down and you've got Sherratt or Poolman as your next kind of core to come in, they're both relatively healthy players. Obviously you can have a freak accident, but I'm just saying like both those guys, well, not Poolman specifically, but Sherratt has shown that he has
durability.
So I think they should be fine. Again, I have no idea, but I'm going to guess. I think this year the Jets stay relatively healthy.
Last season, Kyle Connor played 20 games for the Winnipeg Jets. This year, he will play over or under 48.5 games for the Jets.
This is like when Ezzie had his top five bold predictions, and the first one was like, he'll play all 82 games, and then he was gone.
Again, if you listen to Ezzie, you do so at your own peril.
I suspect his time in the AHL is not going to be significant, especially if the Jets show that they need to have a little more balance in the scoring, and they need his kind of scoring on that third line. So I'm going to have him playing over. I suspect he gets called up in the first after 10 games, maybe.
Last question. Between Atlanta and Winnipeg, the franchise has won zero playoff games, as we all well know. At season's end, the Jets will have won over or under 1.5 playoff games.
Well, considering I have the Jets winning at least one round, I'm going to go over on this one.
And there you have it. That is our 2017-18 Winnipeg Jets over-under predictions. We'll circle back towards the end of the year and see how we did with these predictions. Only Dave on the line this year,
of
course.
Yeah, seriously, that's a lot of pressure.
Very conveniently, Mr. Ginsburg is on the injured reserve for this week's show. When we come back, we're joined by Dan Robertson. He's the Montreal Canadiens play-by-play broadcaster on TSN 690. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. Hope you're enjoying the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website, it's got all the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From our sister station in Montreal, TSN 690, we're pleased to welcome to the program Montreal Canadiens play-by-play broadcaster Dan Robertson. Dan, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, no problem. How are you?
Doing very well, Dan. How about yourself? How are things in the United States, the capital of the United States?
So it's beautiful today, and yes, like summer here, it's high 20s, not really hockey weather, but I don't care. I'll take it as long as I can get it.
I can only assume that's fake news, Dan, given that you're in Washington, of course.
No comment on that.
Dan, obviously brought you on to talk about the Habs. It's going to be an interesting season in Montreal. We know that last year, you know, it was a successful regular season, and then the Habs went out in that first round defeat to the New York Rangers this season after an offseason of retooling where they bring in Jonathan Drouin. Carey Price gets his massive contract. You know, the question I've had sort of all offseason is, who has the most pressure on them in Montreal? Is it Drouin as the latest sort of French-Canadian savior of the Montreal Canadiens? Is it Carey Price with that $10 million contract? Or is it general manager Marc Bergevin?
It's Marc Bergevin because... mainly because of two moves or two non-moves, I guess. They didn't bring back Andrei Markov, and Mark has spoken at length about that. He was willing to stick to his guns and wouldn't give Markov what he wanted, so Markov went to Russia, and that upset a lot of people because, I mean, he's an institution in Montreal. He's been with the Canadiens for a very long time, and even at an advanced age, he's still a good player. And with Radulov going to Dallas, a lot of people were upset about that. Not as much as they were with Markov. But that's two pieces that the Canadiens no longer have. Now, the trade that they made to get Jonathan Drouin, I think that's going to work out in the Canadiens' favor in a huge way. And it already did. I mean, against Buffalo, he was brilliant. He had an assist and had the game-deciding goal in the shootout. But, yeah, I think it's on Mark. I mean, the bloom is off the rose. He was, you know, really loved when he first came in, and he's an excellent GM. But as you said, it was another Atlantic Division championship last year, and that doesn't mean much in Montreal or anywhere else, I suppose, when you lose in the first round. So there's heat on him. I don't think Carey Price has ever felt an ounce of pressure in his lifetime. It's just the person he is. I don't think he ever will. Maybe Drouin does, but he's a different cat, too. I think he thrives on it, being a local kid and being a Canadiens fan growing up and getting out of Tampa Bay. He's so happy to play in Montreal, and I am happy to call his games. I used to call his games on TV in Halifax for the 2.5 years he was there, and so now that he's with Montreal, I feel really fortunate because he is so much fun to watch.
Dan, Carl Alzner gets to take part in another Capitals home opener this season, except he'll be doing it from the other side of the rink for the first time in 8 seasons. How has he meshed so far with the Habs?
Oh, he's been good. I mean, I didn't know him at all until camp started, but he's very, I mean, he's not a kid, he's not a rookie, but he's extremely mature, he's a very nice guy, and he's fit in well. The team really respect him as a person and as a player. It's easy to see, and I didn't talk to everybody about Carl Alzner, but you can tell that he fits in well, and he plays a simple game. He was good the other night in Buffalo. He played key minutes. He plays a quiet game, and I didn't realize this until a couple of days ago, but he has played the third longest consecutive games played streak as a defenseman in the history of the NHL behind Bo Meester and Keith Yandle. So he's somebody you can rely on in that sense too. And they needed him in a big way because the entire left side of their defensive core, or most of it, changed. I mean, Beaulieu, you went to Buffalo. Markov went away. Yemelin is gone. So they're going to need him, not for offense, obviously, but to play strong defense. And that's what he did against the Sabres.
Dan Robertson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dan is the Montreal Canadiens play-by-play broadcaster on TSN 690 in Montreal. Dan, you look at the best teams up the middle, and they go deep and they go skilled. And the Habs, I think that would be an area of concern. You know, after Jonathan Drouin, they have Philip Deneau, they have Thomas Plekanec, who is not the player that he once was. How concerned should Habs fans be regarding their center ice position?
Fairly. I mean, it's been a problem for a long time, and they're counting, obviously, on Drouin to be that guy. And they know he can be that guy with the puck. It's without the puck where the concern lies, and we'll see how that works out. It's been the number one question to Marc Bergevin, at least since I've been on the job, and this is my fourth year. And he keeps saying, and he's right, number one or number two centerman, they just don't grow on trees. You have to homegrown them or be creative, like they got Drouin from the trade with Mikhail Sergachev. So, I mean, ideally, Alex Galchenyuk would play center and would be a well-established centerman by now, but it hasn't worked out. He's on the wing. I still think he should be at center, but he can't figure it out in his own end. If they had those two going 1-2 and they were both effective two ways, then I think they'd be in pretty good shape. The Canadians have, I think it's $8 million left in cap space, chiefly because they didn't sign Markov and Radulov. So maybe when the trade deadline comes around, somebody will be available if they think they're in a spot where they can make a run at it if they get a certain centerman. But right now, it'll be a lot like it's been the last couple of years, I think. Rely heavily on price. The power play should be a lot better this year with Drouin. And, you know, they're just hoping to be in a good spot come the trade deadline and get into the playoffs. And as we usually see, anything can happen when you get there.
Dan, what were your thoughts on the NHL debut of 19-year-old defenseman Victor Mete?
He was terrific. He's been so interesting to watch. And for listeners who don't know, he's 19. He was the 100th draft pick a couple of years ago in Buffalo. And he really came in off the radar. A couple of friends of mine from the station saw him at two rookie camps, and all they could talk about was what a great skater he is, and he really is. Not only that, though, he makes great decisions, at least he has so far, and when he makes a mistake, he doesn't get down on himself. Coaching staff doesn't get down on them on him. They tell him to go out and play his game, and what that is joining the rush or pinching a lot. But I'll tell you, the other night in Buffalo, I won't say he got caught. He was in behind the Sabres net, and it looked like he was in trouble because Buffalo got the puck. And a few seconds later, he was back at center ice. He skates so well, he's able to do that. Now, will he go past the nine-game threshold to burn that first year in the entry-level contract? I don't know. I'm not sure if it's in his best interest long-term to play this year. But if he keeps playing like he did the other night, then maybe the Habs will keep him because there's a lot of bodies they have to use on the blue line, but there's not a whole lot of quality, especially on that left side. So it's another burning question in Montreal, but so far so good. He's really looked sharp, not only against Buffalo, but in the pregame too.
Dan Robertson, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dan is the Montreal Canadiens play-by-play broadcaster on TSN 690. Dan, I suspect last season you could have won a fair bit of money if you had said that Paul Byron was going to have the second most goals on the Montreal Canadiens. He had 22 last year, which of course came out of nowhere. His previous career high was 11. You know, given the career year he had, what are reasonable expectations for Paul Byron going into this season?
Maybe 15 goals, not to sell him short, but he had a really high shooting percentage last year. I can't remember what that was.
Just under 23%. 23%.
Oh, well, there you go. You guys are on the ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk to Paul, and he has a great deal of confidence, and he should. I mean, that wasn't a fluke last year, I don't think. His speed creates so many breakaways. And it's kind of funny. When he came to Montreal, I knew a little bit about Paul because I called some of his games in junior. He played in, I guess it was Hull then, they called him the Olympique, and he played with Claude Giroux on a line. And, you know, he was incredible. But you looked at him, he was 140 pounds he was listed. So it took him a while, I think mainly because of that, to establish himself in the NHL. But he really believes in himself, and it's a great story. And he doesn't think there's any reason why he can't score another 20. Now, he's on the fourth line right now anyway. That's always subject to change. But, listen, he's not just about goals. He puts a lot of pressure on opposing teams when he's forechecking because he's so quick. And shorthanded, he is a threat. I mean, 2 years ago, he scored a handful of shorthanded goals, and yeah, so that's another nice part of his game. But as I said, I think if they get 15 out of him and he continues to play in the other facets of his game the way he has since he's become a Canadian and they pick him up off the waiver wire, then I think they'll be happy with him because he does a lot of things quite well.
Dan, Shea Weber was on the ice for 29 minutes and 30 seconds during Thursday's shootout win. Do you anticipate him playing such heavy minutes this season?
Well, it's going to be a problem if he is in the long run, and I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, I didn't want to talk about it on the broadcast the other night because it's game one, and I don't want everyone thinking, okay, well, here we go. The sky is falling. They're thinking that I'm talking about the sky falling, and the sky falls enough in Montreal. But it is a good point because they're going to lean on him a lot. I mean, and they should. He makes big money, and he's a tremendous defenseman. But everything is geared toward the playoffs. It's not good enough anymore, if it ever has been, to have a terrific regular season and then see players kind of take a step back in the postseason. I saw it with Price 2 years ago when he won the Vezina and the Hart. He was unbelievable. and it was really difficult for him to hold up that standard in the playoffs because he played too many games. And so it's sort of a, I guess, a good comparison. Now, it's the same old thing, though. You get a lead, and what are you going to do? You know, you got one goal lead. You're not going to say, well, Shea, in 3 months, we want you to have more juice, so just sit this one, sit the shift out, right? I mean, coaches are going to lean on the guys who they lean on, but it is a balance, and they're going to have to get better play from Jeff Petrie, I think, than they got last year, because when he's good, he's very good. But, you know, Weber, he was hammering guys the other night, just so strong in his own end. But, yeah, they can't afford to burn him out early in the season.
Dan, we'll let you go on this last question. We know that Claude Julien came over as head coach in the middle of the year last year. This season he has a full training camp. He has the full off season in order to get his system firmly in place. Have you noticed any difference between the Habs sort of as they were at towards the end of the year last year and at the start of this season with the entire training camp behind them?
No, I can't say I have. Maybe I'm not smart enough to detect that, or it's just too early, but you know that it has to help. I mean, a lot of the players talked about when they struggled, again, they lost their first six in the preseason, and everybody was losing their minds in Montreal, you know, because it's so important to win those games.
Of course.
And the players kept saying, you know, we're learning a new system, and they weren't just making things up. They were obviously telling the truth. And they're coming around. I mean, a lot of teams are like this, and I think it's part of the reason we've seen such high scores already is that, you know, even though it's a long preseason, it takes a while to get the kinks out. And so there's some of that going on with Montreal. But what I will say, one thing I can tell you with honesty, because I've talked with players about this, that it got really rough at the end of Michel Therrien's tenure with the Canadiens. He was feeling the pressure. He was yelling too much. Claude Julien came in, and one player told me last year, it was Jeff Petrie, actually, he said he never yells. You know, obviously he can get his point across, but professional athletes don't need to be yelled at every day. And I think it's the kind of thing with Claude, and obviously I haven't been in the room, but you do your job, he's going to treat you like you deserve to be treated. And if you make mistakes or if he sees a shortcoming, he'll address it, but he'll do it in a respectful manner. So I don't know how much of that, you know, sort of works and transcends into wins, but I know that it makes for a happier dressing room, and that has to help out in the long run. I think he's an excellent coach.
Dan Robertson is the Montreal Canadiens play-by-play voice on TSN 690. Dan, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Dan. When we come back, we discuss Connor McDavid. The Jets have the unenviable task of trying to stop him on Monday night in Edmonton. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
I don't really know, honestly. You know, like I keep saying, I feel pretty good on the ice. I mean, you try and get your legs moving as fast as you can, and you just try and make the play. You're not really thinking about how fast you're going. I think that just as long as you're going faster than the other guy, that's all that matters. So, yeah.
Some guy named Connor McDavid had an impressive performance on opening night. A hat trick for McDavid as the Oilers defeated the Calgary Flames. That's the Jets' opponent tonight, 3-0. The Jets and the Oilers on Monday night. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290 and watch on TSN 3. But the great unknown, the great difficult question that every team is going to have to face when playing the Oilers this season is how do you slow down Connor McDavid? The segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, he's been absolutely killing it on stage all week long. Nate Craig is in town. Final shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. And while you're at it, check out the great list of upcoming comedians. That's at rumorscomedyclub.com. So, Dave, the goals that Connor McDavid scored on Wednesday night especially the second goal, the breakaway goal. He was clocked just under 41 kilometers an hour as he skated from his own zone through the Calgary Flames defensemen as if they weren't even there to get the goal past Mike Smith. I mean, short of praying and or a chainsaw, how do you possibly slow down Connor McDavid?
Well, Drew, if I had that answer, I suspect I'd be on an NHL staff being paid millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And I my guess would be that most other teams are trying to figure out exactly how to do it. And the concern for them should be the fact that he came in here looking into the season, looking to better himself, looking to get to that next level. He looks at the goals that separated him and, you know, there was an interesting article from Frank Saravelli on TSN talking about how he saw the difference in his game from Crosby's game and even Austin Matthews' game. And he's talking about the goal that Austin Matthews scored here in Winnipeg, how he tipped in that puck. And, you know, Connor McDavid said, you know, in all the years I've been in the league, I don't have one tip goal.
Right.
And so the point of that is that he's attempting to modify his game so he's not just scoring those spectacular end-to-end rushes that have everybody in Edmonton standing on their feet cheering. He's trying to add to the game, and he's looking at what Austin Matthews does, and he studies tape of what Austin Matthews does and Sidney Crosby does. And he says, you know, he looked at the rebound goals, and Sidney Crosby had 17 rebound goals.
Mm-hmm.
Connor McDavid had 9 rebound goals. So his point is, if he's going to be getting to these different areas and scoring now from all over the ice, not just where he would traditionally have seen him score, that's going to add an element that I don't know that teams are going to be figuring out how to defend.
No, it's an impossible task. I mean, he's going to get his points and he's going to get his goals. You just have to hope that he doesn't singularly take over a game and dominate your team as a result. You just have to put bodies in his way. You have to be so conscious about your defensive positioning that you can't even let it be. You can't give him any space to breathe almost. You just have to have a guy almost in front of him and multiple guys maybe in front of him at all times so he can't get into that second gear, third gear, fourth gear, and then, I mean, his fifth gear, which it doesn't take him long to go from first gear to fifth gear. That's the problem, is in the blink of an eye, he's there, and before you know it, he's past you. And it's not like TJ Brody is some, you know, slum defenseman. Well, what he did on Wednesday night is just incredible.
It feels almost like what teams used to do to Timu Solani when he played here for Winnipeg, and that he was so fast, and you'd have to have a guy just sticking on him. But how well did that work? I mean, he still got his opportunities. He still got his chances to score. So, I mean, like, you're right, Drew. The only way you can mitigate it is by being conscious of where he is, not giving him time and space, because that's the key. When Connor McDavid has time and space, he's so creative with the puck.
Yeah.
And he creates that time and space. So, I mean, to try and offset it is going to be very difficult, obviously, because look what he's done. He's, you know, the clear favorite to win every award, that, you know, category, assuming he stays healthy. And there's a reason for it. He's one of the, you know, between him and Sidney Crosby, the two of the best players in the NHL by far.
Yeah, and the thing about McDavid that makes him so special, there's been a lot of fast guys. There's a lot of good skaters in the annals of the NHL. But what he does with the puck on his stick, and you know, speed on its own is pointless. But it's the speed and it's the creativity and the ability to do it while he's got the puck on his stick that makes him so dangerous and puts him into that other elite level from guys who are simply just fast players. Craig Button and Gino Retta on TSN's That's Hockey sort of addressed this question and talked about the fascination of McDavid and the ability that McDavid possesses with the puck on his stick. Here's what they had to say.
Director of Scouting Craig Button. All right, Craig, a true or false question. Connor McDavid is the fastest skater in NHL history while carrying the puck. True or false?
Well, I'm going to phone TJ Brody, and I bet you he's going to say true, because I'm definitely saying true.
His skating is simply amazing. He is so fast that he actually creates his own breakaways. From a scouting standpoint, how does he make that happen?
Well, you know, you think about speed and you think about just straight out like a Usain Bolt, but I see him more like a Formula One driver where he can gear up and gear down. But when he gears up, you watch how he crosses over. His ability to maintain that speed as he crosses over. Here he is going to his right, and now the puck is not in position. Now he comes back on the crossover. His center of gravity never allows him to lose speed, and he just takes right off. Further than that, he takes the puck and keeps it out of the stick checking of opponents. So he pushes the puck ahead. They're not catching him, and they get no chance at the puck. So when you consider that not only can he get to top speed, he also has that ability to make sure that when he's moving through and he has to move left or right, he never loses speed. Again, how does he get so wide open here? Well, let me show you. Here he is. He knows the puck's coming. One, two, three, and now you're talking about going from first gear to fifth gear. And it's not only that that he's able to do. He's able to make those plays at that high speed, think at high speed. Now, when you think about what he did on the breakaway that led to his second goal of the game, it was breathtaking. When I watched him in junior, Gino, I used to watch defensemen start to turn when they were 15 feet away from him. You know what? I'm starting to see that in the NHL. You know what the speed limit is in school zones in Edmonton? 30 kilometers an hour. Well, I'll tell you what. Watch him get going here. And there again, one hand on the stick, puck in front of him, no needless stick handling. And now there's no chance for anybody to get near him. I mean, he takes this up. Watch how fast he gets going. And there it is. Accelerate, one, two, threes in sixth gear. And 30 kilometers an hour in a school zone. I'll tell you what. He took the Calgary defense to school in the first game of the season. He's going to be doing that to a lot of defensemen in the NHL.
Former longtime NHL defenseman Hal Gill had the fun tweet last night after seeing Connor McDavid do all this. He said, now with all the enforcement of the new slashing penalties, Connor McDavid's going to score 100 goals. Forget trying to stop him. He's impossible to slow down now. A lot of respect from a former D-man.
There you go, Jets fans. You have something to look forward to on Monday night. Can you possibly slow down and stop Connor McDavid? When we come back, Dave Jamieson from our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260, is going to join us. We'll talk about the Oilers. We'll talk about McDavid. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Producer Rory doing a great job on the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And the website, our website, your home of the Winnipeg Jets online, is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From our sister station in Edmonton, we're pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend, Dave Jamieson. Dave, good morning. Thanks for doing this. How are you, my friend?
Excellent. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Dave. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as we celebrate the long weekend here. Dave, we obviously we're talking about the Edmonton Oilers. The Jets and the Oilers will do battle Monday night in Edmonton. And, you know, last segment we were talking about Connor McDavid because, I mean, the entire hockey world constantly is talking about Connor McDavid. What he did on Wednesday night, going from 0 to 40 kilometers an hour in, you know, no time flat, was truly one of the more amazing things you're going to see a hockey player accomplish. Just sort of your thoughts on that second goal as part of his hat trick against the Flames on opening night.
Well, I don't want to say it's a career-defining play, but it's a career-defining play to this point in a very short career that he's had. He's done lots of things that make you, you know, stare open-mouthed at what he's just done on the ice. But there was something about just the raw and potent speed that he exhibited there, going by very good defensemen. TJ Brody is an excellent defender, and he didn't look it on that play. But I don't think there's any shame in that, given what McDavid did. I mean, as you just said, you know, going from a standing start to 40 kilometers an hour and making it look easy, and then to go in and score in the way he did on Mike Smith, who was having a tremendous game to that point. I mean, it's funny to be, you know, Connor McDavid's done incredible things already in his career, but that play on opening night when a lot of eyes are on all of the teams in the NHL has people talking, well, here we are, you know, we're several days past it now, and we're still going back to that play. You know, on my show, I had James Duffy on Thursday. He goes, I and wait to see all, you know, the 81 games after that one, because you're waiting and hoping you see something like it.
Dave, Oilers rookie Kyler Yamamoto admitted to having nerves in his NHL debut. What was your impression of his first NHL game?
I looked like a rookie. Looked like, you know, he'd had a tremendous preseason, and that's obvious. That's why he was, you know, made the opening night roster. I mean, I think he, you know, it wasn't a bad game by any stretch, but I just thought he you know, looked to be slightly uncertain in his surroundings. And, you know, there was a point there where he was sat, and Zach Cassian was taking, you know, the lion's share of Yamamoto's time. And so, you know, look, I think that, you know, that's like pennies from heaven. It just landed on the Oilers. Yamamoto, obviously, you know, is an offensively skilled and very intelligent player, but I don't think anybody projected that he would have that kind of camp and would ultimately make them send, you know, Jesse Puljujarvi down to Bakersfield. And, you know, they've got eight more games with Yamamoto. Do they go the full nine? I don't know. They're going to get Slepyshev back soon. And, you know, there's no need to rush. I mean, that's the position the Oilers are in now. They haven't experienced that for over a decade, where they're now a team that can take their time with young players. And that's as it should be.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on TSN 1290. Dave is, of course, the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, Ryan Strome came over in the offseason from the New York Islanders in exchange for Jordan Eberle. How did he look in his debut for the Oilers, and what are expectations for Strome, a guy who was, I think safe to say, inconsistent in his time on Long Island?
Well, he didn't garner great reviews through the preseason, Ryan Strome. You know, he was drafted where he was for a reason. He's got ability, and he demonstrated that sporadically in New York, but because of who he was traded for, Jordan Eberle, and here's the thing, I mean, Jordan Eberle, you know, was a consistent, you know, 25-goal scorer pretty much for his entire career, very creative, but he was, you know, the last image Edmonton fans have of him is not doing anything of note in the postseason. And he was the longest-serving Oiler. He'd never been to the playoffs. And a lot of people went into, you know, into the playoffs thinking, okay, if there's anybody here who is going to be, you know, supremely motivated to do well, it would be Jordan Eberle. And he was most nights just baggage. And so, you know, Ryan Strome coming here, I don't know if Edmonton fans are an impatient bunch. I know, you know, as are Jets fans, they're going to want to see some return fairly quickly. And you know, I guess at this point you have to be optimistic. He's not playing with McDavid right now, which was, you know, the Oilers and a lot of other people had him projected on the first line. And it's Dreisaitl and McDavid right now. But, you know, and until that particular duo or that trio with Patrick Maroon stops being effective, they're, I would imagine they're not going to be in a rush to change it. So Ryan Strome's going to have to find a way to, you know, be contributing to both ends of the ice. And in preseason, he was lackluster, not very noticeable on a lot of nights, and that has some people a little concerned.
Dave, Cam Talbot, I believe, started 73 games last season for the Oilers. Do you expect him to play that much this year?
Well, if he plays like he did last year, yeah, I would assume so. I don't think that, you know, that would be the optimal situation. I mean, you know, he... despite repeated questioning about fatigue and whether or not he was handling the load, I mean, he handled it supremely well. And also, you know, he and his wife welcomed twins last year during the season. So, you know, he had a lot going on both on and off the ice, and he held up incredibly well. I mean, the Oilers had a great run of health last year. I mean, they're obviously, the, you know, Sucker is injured now and won't be back for several months. But during the course of the regular season, I mean, Talbot was... came out of that clean, and that's fortunate. You know, Lauren Bossois, I think, demonstrated in the preseason. He had a shutout in the preseason, and I think was very steady, and I think they would like to get him more involved and get him more starts. I don't know what the magic number is. Does he play 20, 25? I don't know. I don't, you know, until that's the thing. When you have a starter like Cam Talbot playing as well as he does, you know, you're reluctant to stop that just so you can get another, you know, notch in there for Lauren Bossois. But, you know, what he demonstrated in the preseason is he could be a very dependable backup right now, if given the opportunity.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, you mentioned Andre Sequeira in your previous answer. You know, he's obviously going to be out for the next few months given the injury he suffered. You know, are the Oilers going to miss him more than people are giving him credit for? You know, he's sort of, when he was signed by the Oilers, people thought it was too much money, but he came in last year and certainly was part of a stabilizing force that sort of solidified the Oilers' back end. Are they going to miss Sequeira more than people think?
Oh, I think so. I think that, you know, if there is a criticism of the Oilers, and there's always a criticism of teams, nobody's, to my mind, has built the perfect beast yet, but is that they lack a stud defenseman, and they are probably not as strong on defense as a team that is, you know, a prospective Stanley Cup contender. Now, I think Sequeira, you know, again, you have to manage your expectations. I think playing within that group, he was really effective. He's got enough offensive upside that he can contribute there. I don't think he hurts you terribly defensively. And I, you know, until somehow, you know, a 21-year-old Drew Doughty appears on the scene and finds his way to Edmonton, they're going to have to count on his return to health, continued development of Darnell Nurse and Matthew Benning, who, you know, Benning really was a welcome surprise last year in terms of where his game was at. Didn't have a great preseason, but you know, again, showed enough last year that, you know, there's a reason he's playing and playing as much as he is. I think Sequeira, it's an absence that they'll feel. And until they can, when he comes back, how effective he's going to be. But I agree with you. I think that people may underestimate his absence from the lineup.
Last year's Oilers team improved 33 points, going from 29th to 8th in the span of a year, winning one round, and they pushed the second series, obviously, to seven games. Is it too soon to be thinking Stanley Cup Finals for this group?
I guess it depends on who you talk to. I mean, yeah, it seems if last year, and I hate to use the term fluke because that isn't fair when you know, fluke is a one-game winner-take-all victory, you know, against a heavily favored opponent. That might qualify as fluke. When you do what they did over the course of the season, then get to the playoffs for the first time in a decade, then push a very good Anaheim Ducks team to, you know, the seventh game, that's not fluke. That's real, and that's something that, you know, should be noted. But I think that their evolution and the Oilers' development was fast-tracked. If you thought that the first year of McDavid was, you know, they were going to try and find their direction, and then the second year they would build off that, then this is probably the year we should be, you know, talking about 103 points and getting in the playoffs and, you know, maybe doing some damage along the way. Now, last year has fast-tracked everything. So now people, you know, in the betting outlets are saying, hey, they've got tremendous odds to be Stanley Cup finalists. It seems early for me, but, you know, they've kind of defied a lot of people to this point. I don't want to, you know, just be negative for the sake of being negative because, you know, you've got the best player in the world, not named Sidney Crosby, playing here in Edmonton. That is that's a leg up on everybody else.
it's a nice problem to have. Dave Jamieson, yeah. Our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, you know, Jordan Eberle, we mentioned him. He's off in Long Island. Taylor Hall, of course, was traded prior to last season. He's in New Jersey. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is sort of the last of the old guard of the Edmonton Oilers. You know, right. What of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at this point in time? He's sort of the forgotten man in Edmonton, but is he still a key component to this team going forward?
Could be. He is handsomely compensated to be a low-scoring, defensively diligent center iceman. And if he were making, I heard this a couple of days ago from a colleague of mine, if he were making $4 million, people would love him, but he makes $6 million, so people are, you know, they want more. And they should, and the Oilers should expect more. I mean, when he came to the Oilers, he was, when you're taken, selected where he was, people think, and rightly so, that he is going to be a difference maker, a star, a high-scoring a player who will take over games. He is now, he's creative offensively, he's crafty He's not physical. That's not his game. He is, again, he pays attention to the small stuff, and he's defensively responsible. But again, for $6 million, you want more. I mean, you pay $6 million for goaltenders, you know, and people who can produce offensively. And he doesn't do that. And so, you know, Peter Chiarelli not long ago held a media availability, and he said, yeah, it's a show-me season for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And he is the last vestige of the failed youth movement slash rebuild slash new direction of the Oilers that, you know, went nowhere, and he's the last piece of it.
Dave, talking about getting more out of players, what about UC Jokinen? Do you think he has enough left in the tank to help out in that top nine role?
Certainly has demonstrated so far. It may be one of the, you know, shrewder pickups that Peter Chiarelli, I mean, he's done a lot of good stuff, Chiarelli, that is. So I think, you know, Jokinen, and, you know, and there's some thought, I'm not sure how much this played into the Oilers going out and getting him, is that he can, when Puljujarvi is back with the Oilers, and that will happen at some point, is that he can help mentor him. But I think Jokinen is, you know, he is certainly worthy to be on the roster, and you know, how much he's got left, I would presume, and he's still a young guy, that there's still something there where he can chip in. And, you know, it goes to depth, right? Everybody talks about it, and not everybody's got it. And I think the Oilers probably have more than some people give them credit for, right? They get known for McDavid and Draisaitl, and, you know, and that's fine. But I think the Oilers are a deeper team than people will freely admit to.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. Drake Cajula obviously played last season for the Oilers. He had 60 games played, 18 points. What are expectations for him as he is sort of another one of those key young Oilers as part of this young, talented roster?
Well, in terms of, you know, where he's at, and what he's done, and what he, you know, can presumably still do is, you know, more of the same. And you know, again, I think a guy who was a pleasant find, who, because of where the Oilers were, I think the expectations were low, and we exceeded that. So, you know, it's like any young player who, not, again, named McDavid or Draisaitl, is, can build off what they did last year in a very, you know, very solid season, and where can they take that game? Where can they, you know, within, because everybody has limits, I guess, except McDavid, is, okay, he did that last year. You know, can he replicate the points or build on that by, you know, 10 maybe, let's say, continue to play well at both ends of the ice, as they, everybody, you know, wants players to do. You know, I think that, you know, but because of who else is on the lineup, he can kind of fly under the radar. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that that fans and media are going to single out, you know, if the Oilers hit a tough patch, that they're going to go, well, you know, it's Cajula who's not contributing. I mean, the Oilers are going to live and die by McDavid, Draisaitl, and Talbot. If they are playing at the best of their abilities and everybody else is, you know, good to great or good to, you know, very good, then the Oilers are going to be fine, right? But if the stars aren't shining on most nights, then, like, you know, teams anywhere else, not just in hockey, they'll struggle.
The Jets and the Oilers will do battle on Monday night. Jets fans will get their first glimpse up close and personal about what Connor McDavid can do against their hometown team. Dave Jamieson is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260. Dave, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Dave. It's head to break. When we come back, the Manitoba Moose season got underway last night in Grand Rapids. We talk about Moose expectations for this upcoming year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
There comes Scarbosa. A hand on the right side. Played out in front. Scarbosa, the deflection. Rebound chance. Scores. Manitoba within two. It's a 4-2 game.
Good friend of the program, Mitch Peacock, with the call last night and the call all season long on Manitoba Moose Hockey. The Moose were in Grand Rapids to play the defending Calder Cup champion, Grand Rapids Griffins. They fall to the Griffins by a 5-2 margin last night. Back in action tonight. A game you can hear, of course, on moosehockey.com. Dave Minuk, a man who's very familiar with the Manitoba Moose, having called a number of the games or done analysis on a number of the games alongside Mitch Peacock last year, and is at every Moose game at Bell MTS Place. Dave, what are expectations? The Manitoba Moose have struggled for the past two seasons, to put it mildly. 25th in the AHL last season, 28th in the season before. For those who follow the Moose closely, and you know there certainly is a following, of course, because they're the farm team for the Winnipeg Jets and well-attended Moose games night in, night out. Is this the year that the Moose can sort of break out of their doldrums of being a bottom feeder in the AHL and maybe make more of a run towards the playoffs?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they definitely have a very interesting group. It's pretty much their entire 2015 draft class is playing now for Manitoba. I was looking at that yesterday when I kind of did some news and notes and put it together for the website. You know, a number of players, now we don't know, Drew, because of course you don't know what's going to happen in the season, whether Kyle Connor will get called up. I suspect Jack Rozovic at best will probably play one or, you know, a few games with the Jets towards the end of the season, perhaps, depending on how their season is going.
Yeah, you expect Rozovic to primarily be with the Moose for the majority of the season, barring something unexpected.
That's right. And then you have another number of other prospects. You have Jansen Harkins, who didn't play last night, but he's an interesting prospect to watch.
Mm-hmm. Former second-round pick back in 2015.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, literally, Mason Appleton, who's a sixth-rounder from 2015. You've got Sammy Niku, who's the seventh-rounder from 2015. Mm-hmm. The only guy I think – there's two guys from the 2015 class who aren't, and it's Eric Foley, who's still playing in college, and Matteo Gennaro, who they didn't sign to a deal.
Right. He was a seventh-round pick, I believe.
Yeah, so realistically, they've got a lot of a big crop of their prospects, and you know, most of the guys who they've a lot of guys that they've drafted, like Michael Spacek, there's another 2015, that's the fourth rounder. Mm-hmm. So you see really that draft class is getting in there and kind of like infusing the players that they want to see, their prospects that are potentially going to be call-ups for the big club. Nelson Noje suffered an injury in his first game of the first shift of the first preseason game.
So back in Grand Forks they were playing.
In Grand Forks, yeah. And so he's out for 4 to 6 months, which is unfortunate for his kind of trajectory as a defenseman. But, you know, Coach Vincent was talking about what they're going to do to kind of keep him engaged, because it sounds like obviously he's going to need surgery, and how they're going to keep him mentally involved in Moose hockey and essentially kind of up to date with what they're doing as a group.
Sure, because Noje is a guy who they probably had high hopes for to be a horse on their back end, given that he had time in the NHL last season with the Winnipeg Jets. So that's a big loss on the Moose back end to start the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've still got Julian Melchiori, and mm-hmm. you've got someone Jets fans and Moose 1.0 fans will remember, Mark Flood, who played the last season in Manitoba, and then he played 33 games for the Jets, and he played a number of games for the St. John's Ice Caps before he went to the KHL for a number of years. He's back. He signed a PTO with the team yesterday or the day before. So Mark Flood, a name fans are familiar with, he kind of helps solidify. He's had veteran defensive presence. Peter Stojkovic, local Winnipeg product. He had a pretty good year last year. You got Julian Melchiori, who's obviously spent some time with the Jets organization.
Yeah, Jan Kostelec, a 2013 draft pick, is going to be on the back end for the Moose as well.
Yeah, the most important player from my perspective is Sammy Niku. I think I shouldn't say most important. The most interesting player for me to watch will be Sammy Niku from a defensive perspective. He's a prospect who's coming over from Finland. He's really smooth skater, really excellent skater. You know, how is he going to transition to the NHL/AHL game? How is he going to change? And apparently, I think Mitch was telling me that the ice surface in Finland is a little bit, it's not as European. It's more of almost, I think it's a bit more of a hybrid, a little closer to the NHL.
So not quite the international ice surface that we see in the Olympics coming up in February, but not the same as the NHL size.
Exactly. So Sammy Niku is a player who maybe is used to the size, but still has to get used to the speed of the game and the difference in the types of players you're playing against. So we'll see how he adapts. He's a player I'm really interested in watching. And then from a forward perspective, again, you've got the kind of the standard ones that you would really expect, the Kyle Connors, the Jack Rozovics. This is, of course, looking at players as an individual development thing, because, you know, the Moose really has two mandates. Mm-hmm. The number one mandate, the most important one, is development.
Sure.
Right? And we've heard that since the beginning. that this is what they're doing. Coach Vincent, when he took over from Keith McCambridge, who's now the head coach in Hartford, essentially said that we're going to be a conduit for the Jets. We're the development arm of the Jets. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean you can't also win? Because
ideal world, if your best Moose players are good enough to eventually be
right.
NHL players, that should translate to victories on ice.
Yes, but you have to surround those guys with veterans who can at least kind of offset some of the mistakes that these guys are still making.
Sure,
because regardless of whether they're high end prospects, but they're still going to be, you know, some of those growing pains that you're going to be used to with younger players. So,
and I think they've done that this year. I mean, more so than previous years with Michael Scarbosa, of course, who the Jets mm-hmm. signed as a free mm-hmm. agent, and Buddy Robinson. Mm-hmm. Those are guys who are, you know, AHL veterans who know how to produce at the AHL level to sort of help with the development of some of the younger guys.
Yeah, and a player like, you know, who's an interesting kind of reclamation project is a Brody Sutter. You know, he's a Carolina Hurricanes, if I recall correctly, seventh rounder back in 2011. He's a big boy. He's got some speed. Had two goals in the opening game of the preseason. We'll see what he can do at the AHL level. Another player worth watching is Francis Beauvillier, although that name takes me a while to get.
Yeah.
He was playing in university hockey. He was a draft pick of the Florida Panthers, I think a sixth rounder back in 2012. And he played nine games last year with Manitoba at the end of the year.
Four goals in those nine games.
Yeah, he has some speed. He's an interesting player. So, you know, he looked good in the opening of I only saw one of the training camps for the Moose, but he looked good. His speed was good. So he'll be a player to watch that's kind of off the radar, I'm saying. Like, not the traditional, the Rozovics and the Eric Comrie and the Lemieux and the DeLeo, that sort of thing. Guy's a little bit off the radar.
Well, you mentioned Eric Comrie, so the goaltending tandem is clearly going to be Eric Comrie and Michael Hutchinson. Mm-hmm. Hutchinson still hasn't spoken to the media, I believe, since being sent down from the Winnipeg Jets training camp.
Yep.
So maybe some hard feelings there a little bit. It'll be interesting to finally speak to Michael Hutchinson in the next few days, you would presume.
Yeah, I mean, he's entitled to not talk if he doesn't want to, I guess.
Disappointed,
you know.
Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, but the reality is that's, you know, really on him. I mean, he's the, you know, you control what you control, right? So, I mean, that was he had to know what the writing was going to be on the wall after last year.
Right.
So it's not a shock. The reality is that, you know, he has to make the best of his situation. And the truth is, in fact, that he probably should be looking at this as an opportunity if he wants to get back into the NHL to really just kind of embrace what it is that he's there for and make the best of that opportunity. So
Comrie's,
you know,
going to get the bulk of the starts, though. I mean, Comrie had 51 starts last year for the Moose, or played in 51 games, rather. You'd expect to see similar numbers, more likely, because this is a guy like, you know, Kyle Connor, like Jack Roslovic, like Nick Petan. There's no reason for them to not be playing. They need to continue to play and develop.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Eric Comrie is the goalie, the number one goaltender of the Manitoba Moose. There's no question about that. Same as last year when Andre Pavlik was there or Jamie Phillips were there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Eric Comrie's net, because the whole point, again, like getting back to my original one, which was development. And, you know, for Eric Comrie to properly develop, I mean, a lot of people talk about Eric Comrie being ready for the NHL. And I can understand, you know, we talked about, you know, with Steve Alliquette about the, you know, the when NHL goaltenders are, or when a guy is ready to kind of assume that NHL mantle. From my perspective, having watched Eric Comrie, and I think especially with a more solidified, experienced defense in front of him, perhaps, he will have a better opportunity to thrive and maybe not face so much. You know, of course, they're playing the Grand Rapids Griffins. That's the defending Stanley Cup, Calder Cup champion.
Yeah.
So that's not exactly an easy test. But the fact is that I really think, like, if you give him that opportunity this year, then perhaps, you know, realistically, maybe not next year even because of what's happening with Mason and Hellebuck, but perhaps the year after that, you've got that Hellebuck-Comrie tandem, or, you know, perhaps you trade Eric Comrie. I mean, he's an asset to be traded for a team that maybe need a new goalie, and the Jets get an asset that, you know, they need, whether it's another forward or something else, you know. So we never know what is in the future, but I think a player like Eric Comrie needs those opportunities to start. So you're going to see him get the bulk, and Mike Hutchinson will take whatever is left over.
And you mentioned Jamie Phillips. He's, of course, going to be the starting goaltender for the ECHL Jacksonville Icemen, the Jets ECHL affiliate.
Yeah, he was assigned last week with two other players to the ECHL.
All the Jets goaltending prospects going to get the bulk of their starts, be it at the AHL or ECHL. AHL level. The Moose they're in Grand Rapids again to play the Griffins. That's on Moose Hockey, 6 p.m. tonight, and then the home opener next Friday against the Cleveland Barons. Is that right?
No.
The Cleveland Monsters?
Correct.
They're not Lake Erie Monsters anymore?
No.
Okay. So they're the Cleveland Monsters.
You went with the original name. I think it was the IHL name. And then you went with the wrong city. And then you went back to the right city, right name. So
I eventually got it.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, against the Cleveland Monsters next Friday night. That's the Moose home opener. And then Sunday afternoon as well. Yeah,
that's a busy week. That's, I think, Moose, Jets.
Friday, Moose, Saturday, Jets, Sunday afternoon.
The Jets play... Is Thursday or Friday? No, sorry.
Thursday they're in Vancouver.
Yeah.
The Jets come back next Saturday to play the Hurricanes at 6 o'clock on Saturday, and then a few hours after that, on Sunday afternoon, it'll be the
Moose.
And then
there's another Jets game on the Tuesday. So it'll be a very busy week.
Well, you know, I checked your schedule and you're free, so it works well, very well. When we come back, we give our predictions on the NHL's award winners for this coming season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Crosby scores!
That puck has got eyes sometime. Crosby turning it forehand, backhand, a cradle here and a zigzag there.
Jackets come in tonight. Quick shot! Bobrovsky reaching behind him to make the stop. Outstanding effort there by Bobrovsky.
When the puck drops, the place to be is Bernstein's Deli. Hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Watch all Jets games this season starting this past Wednesday night at Bernstein's Deli. Take advantage of their game day specials. That's Bernstein's Deli, located in the Cordon Village Mall, corner of Cordon and Lanark. It's also the home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. We're going to be there for various road games throughout the year. It's Hockey Night at Bernstein's Deli, the corner of Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you on this Saturday morning. The bottom of the hour has come and gone. Time for some awards predictions there, Dave, as the NHL season is a game or two old for various teams. Pittsburgh Penguins, one of those two teams that have played two, lost two. But I don't think you'd get too worried about the Pittsburgh Penguins thus far, despite that 10-1 shellacking at the hands of the Chicago Blackhawks. Art Ross Trophy, Dave. We'll start with that for the most points. Most people are penciling in Connor McDavid as the winner of that trophy. Are you willing to go off the board, or are you saying, yeah, it's going to be McDavid's to win as long as he, you know, stays healthy, relatively healthy for the season?
Drew, I would suggest that whoever is using pencil with Connor McDavid should be switching to pen.
Some good old-fashioned Sharpie at this
point.
Yeah,
I mean, look, that's straight at Connor McDavid. I mean, again, like you said, provided he's healthy, then he's the easy winner in my mind.
Yeah, I can't argue with you there. It's with all due respect to Sidney Crosby, you know, you can certainly make the argument that Crosby is still the better of the two players.
Overall, yeah.
When you look at the entirety of an NHL player and their responsibilities. But I think that for most points, you heard what Jagr said, that McDavid might get 100 goals. So, you know, it's been a long, long time. Well, that's never happened. 92, of course, with Gretzky. But, you know, Connor McDavid is a special player, as we saw this past Wednesday night when he pulled up the hat trick. Speaking of most goals, Rocket Richard Trophy. That goes to the player with the most goals. Connor McDavid certainly in the running, but there's a lot of different candidates for this one. Some guy here in Winnipeg named Patrick Laine is a lot of people's choice for that award as well.
I was thinking a healthy Steven Stamkos originally.
Sure.
I was considering going with Stamkos on this one, but I'm going to go with Sidney Crosby.
Really? Sidney Crosby.
He still does all those dirty things that needs to get done to get those goals. And, you know, provided he, again, stays healthy, I think Sidney Crosby is going to win it.
It's an interesting one. I mean, you know, Crosby is certainly, he had the most goals last season with 44.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason to think it can't be him. You know, nobody talks about Alex Ovechkin. He, you know, finished 14th in the league with 33 goals last year. had the hat trick, of course, in the opening game for the Washington Capitals. You know, Alex Ovechkin, you know, still knows how to put up goals in the NHL level, so he's an interesting name to watch in that.
On pace for 240 goals, goals.
Yes, and that's naturally, you know, of course, he's only going to keep on that pace. Hart Trophy, most valuable player, Dave.
This one to me is between Crosby and McDavid. And it's,
I think you're going to be saying that for the next few years.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I think I'm going to. Ooh, so tough. I'm going to go with McDavid. But I mean, to me, that's just a toss up. I think it's really just between the two of them.
I can't argue with you. I think it is a toss-up. It's just a matter of, you know, a lot of people, when it comes to the Hart Trophy voting, they just look at the flashy numbers, mm-hmm. and McDavid is certainly going to have the flashy numbers, which is not to say that he's, you know, detrimental in his own zone or anything like that, but, you know, the things that Crosby does so well, a lot of them are non-quantifiable, and, you know, Sidney Crosby doesn't need to do it in the regular season. He needs to be his usual self in the regular season, and then he can, you know, you can let his actions speak for themselves come playoff time. But I would agree with you that I think it's Hart Trophy McDavid, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Conn Smythe goes to Crosby or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Vezina Trophy for the best goaltender in the NHL. This is sort of it's a bit wide open. I mean, we know that Carey Price and Braden Holtby are also always two of the most talked about names. You know, Bobrovsky and Columbus as well. A lot of different candidates for this one as we start the 2017-18 season.
Well, prior to the shellacking, I might have gone with Matt Murray in Pittsburgh. I think he's an interesting name to watch. Mm-hmm. But I still am a Carey Price guy. Like, I just think that Carey Price is the way to go. I think his body of work is just so substantial, and they're going to rely on him. Like, you know, a guy like Cam Talbot, I mean, should get some consideration considering, again, speaking of body of work, 73 games last year. He had the most wins for the NHL for goaltenders. Of course, you know, that's kind of a team award mm-hmm. opposed to a real look at the numbers, but I'm a Carey Price guy. I think Carey Price is the guy who carries that team, and part of that should get him a Vezina consideration.
You know, obviously there's no wrong answer. You mentioned Cam Talbot. He's my choice. I think he's going to do, you know, he's going to, I think, have a great year in Edmonton. Now, how much of that is him and how much of that is the ability to play behind Connor McDavid? You know, I think there's probably something to be said for both arguments, but I think, you know, you can't take away a guy's performance because of the skaters who are in front of him. I think Cam Talbot is going to have a Vezina quality season in Edmonton this year. Norris Trophy for best defenseman. We know the last year it was Brent Burns. We know Erik Karlsson has been there. Drew Doughty is always in the running. Who do you have this year for the Norris Trophy for best defenseman?
Well, I'm a little concerned about my pick because I, you know, was thinking about it and I was going to go with Erik Karlsson because
hasn't played, isn't going to play tonight.
And yeah, so I'm a little concerned based on his health, what we're going to see from Erik Karlsson. I like Brett Burns too. I think the problem for him is that he plays in San Jose and as a result, he just doesn't get the recognition that he's probably entitled to get.
Sure. Unless he puts up another, you know, 75 points like he did last season.
Which is not entirely impossible. I mean,
no, certainly not.
You know, he's just a phenomenal player. And again, like, you just can't discount what he was able to do last year. So I mean, I would have gone with a healthy Karlsson over Burns. But, you know, I mean, I'm a little concerned based on – I'll go with – I'm going to stick with Karlsson. But I think it also really depends on what happens with his health.
I'm going to go with Victor Hedman. I think Victor Hedman in Tampa Bay is primed for a fantastic season. Sort of had an under-the-radar year last year, to be perfectly honest, in that, you know, the Lightning obviously were disappointing in that they didn't make the playoffs with the injury that Steven Stamkos suffered. But Hedman only finished 4 points behind Brent Burns. He actually had more points than Erik Karlsson did last year, albeit in a couple more games. But I think Victor Hedman is my choice for Norris Trophy winner this season for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think the Lightning are going to have a very good year in Tampa with a healthy Steven Stamkos. Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year this year, David.
I'm going with Clayton Keller in Arizona.
Yeah,
I think
a popular one.
I think he's a good pick. I think he's going to, you know, I think he scored his first goal in his first game, I believe, for the Coyotes. So I'm going with Clayton Keller. Charlie McAvoy in Boston, I think, is a good pick, but yeah. I'm going to go with Clayton Keller.
Yeah, he's certainly up there with the most popular picks this year. I'm going to go with the guy who was drafted first overall. Mm. I think he's going to get his opportunities. So Nico Hischier in New Jersey, I think he's got all the talent. I think he's going to have the opportunity. And, you know, much like Keller will also have the opportunity, of course, in Arizona playing on a weak to put it charitably, Arizona Coyotes team. But I'm going to go with the former first overall pick this past season, Nico Hischier, to be the Calder Trophy winner. Jack Adams Trophy for Coach of the Year.
Well, I like Ken Hitchcock. I think he's going to take Dallas and he's going to make them into a contender, a powerhouse in over in Dallas in Texas. So I'm going with Ken Hitchcock.
You know, back to the future there, of course, in Dallas, I think, with Hitchcock. Hard to believe that good things aren't going to happen that way. I might go a little bit off the board. I think I'm expecting big things from the Carolina Hurricanes. Bill Peters. Yeah, I think Bill Peters is a good coach. I think they're poised to break through, given that tremendous defense that they have, and now they have that sort of offensive talent that's coming to its own. I really like the addition of Justin Williams to that forward group there in Carolina. So I think Bill Peters is going to be your winner for Coach of the Year after getting the Hurricanes into the playoffs, and playoff hockey returning to Raleigh, North Carolina. Final one, General Manager of the Year. This one's always sort of a difficult one to anticipate, and I don't really love it as an award, but in any event, General Manager of the Year.
Well, similar to your Coach of the Year, I'm actually thinking Ron Francis, because I think Ron Francis has done a phenomenal job kind of accruing talent, young talent in Carolina. So I was originally going to go either Jim Nill in Dallas, because, you know, I wanted to give him credit for accumulating the players that he did for Ken Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. But I like Ron Francis in Carolina.
Ron Francis is certainly a good option there. And I think, yeah, assuming that they translate to the successful year that we expect them to have, I think that's a good choice. I'm going to go out of Columbus, Jarmo Kekäläinen. I think that the Blue Jackets are going to have a big year in the Metropolitan. They, of course, finished last season as a playoff team, ran into the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round. I am expecting big things from the Blue Jackets, and I think Jarmo Kekäläinen might retool a little bit on the fly. You've heard the talk about Matt Duchene there as a possibility. I think Jarmo Kekäläinen is going to win the award for General Manager of the Year when it's all said and done. When we come back, we got one final segment for you. We'll talk about the Jets and the Flames. We'll look around the NHL at some NHL news and notes. One final segment to come. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Klefbom wanted to knife right down the center lane, but broken up and brought back by Manson. Josh Manson right down the middle, pulls it in and scores! Well, I would get as many pucks at Talbot as possible. Josh Manson does, and he gives Anaheim a 3-2 lead.
NHL news and notes.
That clip off the top was of Josh Manson of the Anaheim Ducks. He's on their blue line. He signed a nice 4-year, $16.4 million extension for the Ducks. No, not offensively flashy, but Josh Manson, one of the better stay-at-home defensemen in the NHL, and as a result, the Ducks reward him with that 4-year contract extension, Dave.
Yeah, it's a great signing for Anaheim. I mean, they traded Shea Theodore rather than losing him in the expansion draft to Vegas. So, and that Shea Theodore is like an upside, you know, first round pick, has a lot of offensive upside versus Manson, who's more of a stay at home defensive defenseman, but his metrics are great. He's a really good player. You know, and fans around here know the name Manson quite well, of course, from his, I believe his father, Dave Manson, the long time, well, maybe not long time, but Jets defenseman for a number of years.
Certainly memorable. How about that?
Yeah, memorable, definitely. So, yeah. So no, I think it's a great deal for Anaheim. And, you know, you get him for 4 years, just over $4 million per. I think it's a great deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Quick update from the Calgary Flames. They're on the ice first, of course, at the Saddle Dome, as the Jets and the Flames will do battle later on. It seems like it's an optional skate for the Flames, so you can't take this as gospel. But early indication is that it won't. Jaromir Jagr isn't ready yet to join the Flames lineup. So by the sounds of it, it doesn't look like Jagr will be in the lineup. But that could change, so again, don't hold me to that. But given the early optional skate and who he's skating with in terms of online rushes, it doesn't look like Jagr ready to join the Flames lineup just yet.
That's not terribly surprising. When they were talking about it, Brad Trey Living was saying it's essentially his second day of training camp. So, like, why would you, you know, you don't really anticipate that he's going to be ready yet to play in the game? So that's what kind of surprised me.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me, I should say.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there with Jagr and with the Flames lineup for tonight. And, of course, we mentioned off the top of the program about the Jets lineup. Sounds like Nick Petan is going to join the lineup, which will certainly please a lot of Jets fans. Nick Petan likely to be playing with Sean Mathias and Adam Lowry, unless something drastically changes from how they had them lined up yesterday at the Jets practice. Jets will hit the ice in Calgary in about 40 minutes time or so. We'll have all the latest news available on illegalcurve.com. And of course, on the pregame show, Hustler and Rick, I believe 6 p.m. tonight, they'll be on here on TSN 1290. Then Kevin O with the pregame show starting at 8 o'clock prior to the late 9 o'clock puck drop in Calgary tonight. You know, what are you looking for from the Jets tonight after the, I mean, it needs to be a bounce back effort because they were embarrassed on Wednesday night. Paul Maurice, you know, skated them pretty hard. He didn't say, you know, this isn't a bag skate because nobody threw up at the end of it. But, you know, this, you can't go to that, you know, skate them hard well too many times before your, you know, desperation sinks in from a team.
I think the key is you just have to play good defensive hockey. They have to play structured hockey. They have to play within a system and figure out what that system is, because sometimes it appears to be a hybrid. And maybe that's what they're doing. But the fact is that it appears sometimes to be a little chaotic. So if you ask me, what do you need to see from the Jets? You don't need to see 7 goals. You don't need to see 5 goals. You need to see a good low-scoring game where they control the play and limit Calgary's offensive chances.
Yeah, and Calgary is certainly an offensively dynamic team, so it's not going to be easy. This isn't like you're playing a team that is, you know, going to try and grind it out. Calgary is a skating team, like most teams are in the NHL nowadays, of course. The emphasis on skating, they can certainly put the puck in net. You know, Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, all guys who can score. Matthew Tkachuk had a great rookie year playing on that 3M line with Backlund and former Winnipeg Jet player, of course, Michael Frolik. So it's a difficult test for the Winnipeg Jets. This Calgary Flames team is a playoff team last season, and the Jets have to, you know, think as they enter this game, this is one of the candidates maybe to drop out of a playoff spot. If we want to be a playoff team, Calgary Flames are one of those teams we're going to be chasing and we have to catch up to. And so it's imperative that the Jets have a bounce back effort compared to what happened on Wednesday night, because if they struggle again tonight defensively, if things don't look good on the defensive side of the ice tonight, and then all of a sudden Monday night you're going into Edmonton, and if your defensive game isn't stellar for against Connor McDavid, well, that's 3 games in the season, and then you're going Thursday night into Vancouver, and I mean, this is not an easy start to the year. If you look at the Jets' opening, you know, month of October, look who they're playing against: the Leafs playoff team, Calgary playoff team, Edmonton playoff team, Vancouver not a playoff team. But then you have the Carolina Hurricanes next weekend that they, you know, are expected to battle. You have the Pittsburgh Penguins twice in October. There's not a lot of margin of error for the Winnipeg Jets before the month of October is over. And if you're 2-8. You know, 3-7-1, 3-6-1. You're chasing. You're chasing the entirety of the rest of the season to try and bounce back at this point. So it really does have to start. It's too early to say must win because it's only the second game of the year, but must improve, no doubt about that.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I wrote about that this morning in the morning papers. I said that, you know, too often you lose these games early on, and sure, you say it's not that big a deal, but then when you're out of the playoffs by 1, 2, 3 points, you mm-hmm. look back to these games and you think to yourself, what would have happened if we had played differently? So there's no question that you want to put these points away early in the season. You want to build up your standings bank so you can bank those points. And if you drop a game, you have a laissez-faire game, you know, midway through the season or a third of the way through the season, it's not as impactful because you've put away those early points. So to your point, Drew, I think there's no question that this team cannot afford to have too many lulls, because while the schedule itself isn't too taxing, the teams they're playing could be. So you really do need to take Calgary very seriously and put forward a really good effort tonight. And then again, you really don't have any opportunity. Like, it's interesting how in years past you'd be like, oh, well, you're taking this team lightly. What have the Jets done to take anybody lately? Like, the reality is the Jets aren't exactly a perennial powerhouse.
Like, why do they deserve to take
Yeah, they don't have the right to take anybody lately. Not. So any team in this league is you know, I mean, Jets were not a playoff team last year.
Yeah.
So until you're a playoff team, until you have the swagger of a team that's won a round, you don't have the opportunity to take any team lately.
Well, two of their first 11 games, only two of their 11 games in the month of October against teams that missed the playoffs last year.
Right.
And they're, you know, most of the teams they're playing, they got two against Columbus. Well, the Blue Jackets have, they were a 100-point team last year, and they have Stanley Cup aspirations. The Penguins, well, two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. We know about them. Minnesota Wild, they have two against the Wild, a Central Division rival. The Winnipeg Jets need to, if you start, you know, 0-2, 0-3, boy, oh boy, is it going to be it's an uphill climb for the remainder of the year. I mean, because remember last year, they could never get over that sort of, they could never get back up to that mark where they were a true 500 team, by which I mean a team that has won half the games that they've played, not a team that is, you know, 20-20-3. That's not 500.
Right.
That's a 500 points percentage. I'm talking about a 500 winning percentage. You have to have that as a minimum threshold, and it doesn't get any easier. It's not a taxing schedule, like you said. You only have one back-to-back in the entirety of the month. That's towards the end of the month when you go to Pittsburgh and then Columbus on a Thursday and then a Friday. The Jets need to get things in order quickly, starting tonight in Calgary, before this thing snowballs. Because the way that they performed on Wednesday against the Leafs, you get the impression that this could snowball out of control quickly.
I wouldn't get too worked up over one game. Again, like, it wasn't their best game, but Anderson was phenomenal. And the truth is that it is a game of inches. I mean, the truth is they get one or two goals early in the power play, and perhaps it's a completely different game. So I'm not willing to say that the season's over because they've lost one game and didn't do it particularly well for the remainder of that game. But the fact is that, you know, that's why we have more than one game. You watch it and you see what happens tonight and you see what happens in Edmonton on Monday. And then you can, you know, start to build over a longer period of time.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting, of course, the Jets and the Flames in action tonight. It's a 9 o'clock puck drop in Calgary. Pre-game show, as I said, 6 o'clock is the pre-game coverage begins with Rick and Hustler. 8 o'clock with Kevin O on your pre-game coverage, and then post-game coverage, of course, in your calls with Kevin O. You know, hopefully things go better for the hometown team tonight than they did on Wednesday. Big thank you to everybody who joined us this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You heard from Dan Robertson, Montreal Canadiens broadcaster, Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. You heard from Kristen Odland of the Calgary Herald and John Mattis of Post Media. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes via Google Play. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Just subscribe, nice and easy. It's also available on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, and my name is Drew Mandel, we thank you for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.